Thank you very much, Paul and O'Vale. Wonderful to be down in Cork. My grandmother's from West Cork, so every year we had the trek. When you used to go on your holidays, used to be to go to your granny's just, and that was it, and we had the wonderful trip. And it's just so nice to be back. And when I started to think about what I'm going to read, I thought the best thing was to start with the Donegal poem, because I presume, except for a few people related to me, most people won't go to Donegal. They go to New York sooner than go to Donegal. And then I heard somebody here tonight has Donegal blood in them, which is great. Very good. So this is Lough Salt. This is Lough Salt. The road from Glen is the width of a lane as we ease through the landscape of brown and mustard tweed. A homespun blanket of moss green drapes the bareness. The roll of mountains eclipses the hills. Derry Day, sleeves knocked. Deep slithers are sliced into the bogland. The jut of Horn Head, Atlantic Drive, Tory Island crouched out in the distance. It is here that young men challenge the fates, where the road holds blackness from tires sliding into wild donut tracks as we pass Loch Dhu, the black dark lake without light. My mother, a returned immigrant, thirsted for Lough Salt, would pile us into a Ford Escort, Sunday driving to where the hills form two lions facing each other. Here she taught us how to breathe deeply before we learned that breathing can come to a sudden stop. There are many turns on the road as Donegal lies before us. Muckish and Errigal, the small shape of Doe Castle. A glacier shaped the valley down onto the bed of an extinct volcano. Below us is a steep drop. We need to take care, look out for each other, as the wind ripples fresh water off the deepest of lochs. We were in the hotel this morning and I looked out the window and there was a seesaw. And there was a child up in the seesaw and a father to put another child down. And I said to my husband, I said, that reminds me of Lakewood. We were born in Ohio, outside Cleveland. And I have these wonderful memories. And at the time when we would have been on the seesaws, there were no seesaws in Letterkenny or in Donegal. And I have these wonderful warm memories of Ohio, but I also have these things that I know weren't right. I lived in a very white area of Lakewood, and there's things that I see now and look back and I think, no, actually, that really wasn't very good in America. I remember being delighted when Ruby shot Oswald and frightened by the witch melting in the Wizard of Oz. I know I met 5 black people. At Jerry's Maid Ellie, the 2 girls at Camp Christopher, and the 2 women who came to our garage sale in Mattawan, New Jersey. I remember the sound of the freight trains as they passed through Bonneville and telling Mom that the guy by the tracks stood in his backyard with no clothes on. I remember the 2 cops sitting on our sofa asking me questions and the neighbor boy who called me sexy. I remember learning the Pledge of Allegiance in kindergarten and how to fold the flag without touching it to the ground. George Washington, who never told a lie, Paul Revere, Ben Franklin, Captain Kangaroo, Pippi Longstocking. I sold cookies for campfire girls, door-to-door in apartment blocks. My sister got her head caught in the porch railings. I remember ballet classes, how to spin around and around in circles without getting dizzy. I remember the song Dizzy. I told Mrs. Palermo that Chuck Contoric was cheating at history, and Chuck gave me the finger. I remember I planned to marry a Kennedy, and I hated Tricky Dicky. I knew if all Greeks looked like Onassis, money just wasn't enough. Italians didn't have to eat porridge. I remember wearing a tissue on my head in St. Patrick's Cathedral and eating a slice of bologna one Friday. The only one in hell was Judas. My aunt drank martinis as she taught me piano. I remember Get Smart, Jackie Gleason, Elvis in black leather trousers, the Three Stooges, they were too violent. Batman and Robin, they came to our ice skating rink, but they were just boys in costumes. We moved. The first time is good just to get me relaxed, but you don't have to. We moved back then. I would have moved into seventh class in the national school. And I think when you have a change in your childhood, as we did, or when you have lost, that the basic, everything gets altered, even down to the very, very basic of necessities. Memories of bread and butter. Bread and butter. Nourishment and strength. Bread can't be unbuttered. Mom, in a flowered apron, making raisin scones and yeast loaves in our Bonnyview Street kitchen. The taste of melted butter, a few scones left to cool for Dad working in downtown Cleveland. Or Pepperidge Farm bread toasted, slathered with Land O'Lakes butter, cinnamon sugar from a yellow plastic jar, watched under the broiler and bubbling. The Clancy brothers sing O'Donnell Aboo as the house fills with the smell of cinnamon. In Lakewood, we were sent to the store for the groceries. In Letterkenny, we took the shortcut to Voices for the messages. Bread and butter, nourishment and strength. Bread can't be unbuttered. A wicker basket hung on a hook in the pantry in Granny's. A list of messages written into a small red notebook. O'Donnell's loaf, a pound of Lagan creamery butter. We made grilled cheese sandwiches the American way. Buttered the outside of the bread, browned it in a frying pan. Dillon Supermarket, Main Street, on my way home from school, a month after Mum has passed away. I do the cooking now, so I know we need bread and butter at home. Holding up the queue at the till, I didn't bring enough money, had no idea how much anything would cost. Bread and butter, nourishment and strength, bread can't be unbuttered. Because I'm here with a gorgeous day in school today, I'm very aware of the weave. I was very, very lucky that my paternal grandmother came from Skull, and our maternal grandmother came from an island, Rutland Island off Burton Port, beautiful, beautiful island. And it's this weave of the jeans and the up and down of Donegal and Cork, the slice. We are here, wrapped by the Atlantic on Rutland, the island of my mother's people. These pink drizzled granite walls housed a whole Ross's red line of their being. They are here with me, head to head, my father and my 11-year-old son, working over strands they have pulled out of a rope, braiding. A sea-blooded man teaching a land-born boy. I've never watched their features so closely. Two profiles intent on the crisscross of cord. Island air has teased the grey and the blonde into tight fisherman's curls. In this light, as the rain washes off the landscape at the distance, I see the same taper of jaw, the same line of their nose. And yet, my son's gaze comes through my mother's brown eyes. A loop is beginning to work back on itself, while youth takes the rope from weather-worn hands and holds a third strand in his pale palm. He is mastering the weave. Boatmen know this. You can drop this loop over a post and a boat will hold fast to the pier. My son is learning. Tight knots, clan knots, turning tides, and when to cut a boat into a wave. For as long as we stay on my mother's island, through days when the winds could shear the grass off the land, for as long as my son keeps returning, he will need my father's knowledge for his survival. The rope end has formed into a strong circle between the experience and the learning. My father pulls the cord as his grandson pulls with all his strength. The loop keeps. The rope is secure, strong enough to hold a boat to the shore. Between them, the splice is complete. This day, our grandmother came from this Rutland Island, and all around the side of Rutland Island is this glorious beach, the back strand. And in her later years, every time she'd meet a stranger, or even several times during the day herself, she would say, "Have you ever seen the back strand?" This poem is for African Paula. The beaching. The pod of whales beached themselves in Rutland Island, chose the isolated sweep of the back strand to come ashore. My grandmother, in her final years, would have understood. Those long-finned pilot whales suffered some trauma, became distressed and confused. And so for her, that winter, when told her grown-up daughter had died suddenly. 3 years later, hearing that her eldest son had passed over, threw something within her off kilter, sent her mind homing towards the back strand. The whales had wandered together, over 30 of them, swam through Scottish waters to the sound of Aran Mór, heading towards the crescent of shoreline and their ending. She would have understood. The Rutland-born woman who had long left the island but yearned for that place, called for it constantly, rose from her sickbed in the middle of the night. "I need to go now. They will be waiting. It will soon be low tide." She wanted to journey, follow those already gone, float ashore, that grief beach her there on the back strand. My experience of Skull is full of stories, full of history, or maybe it was just my grandmother was full of stories, and she always talked about she ran dispatches for Michael Collins, and she knew all those things. And this poem came from a story that I had heard. The Black and Tans, for those that don't know, were a kind of a temporary police force that was in the country at one stage, and they were here.
That's what Adam just does.
He used to drink here. Yeah. I bet you they didn't pay for it either. Wild horses. It is said in Kyung Kong, the head of the hound, the black and tans came from my great-grandfather's horse, a piebald horse who ate windfalled apples from a child's palm, who back-burdened their small farm, who cart-pulled a whole clan the miles to Skull for Sunday Mass. They came for his horse as they came for all others, without any intent of any speedy return. Paddy Callahan, staying gravestone silent, stared at the horse, who then reared full height on his back legs, brandish hooves more deadly than smuggled Fenian guns. So the black and tans went away, past the family house during their nighttime raiding. If Paddy and his piebald came wandering towards a boring checkpoint, the makeshift soldiers stood aside as if he was the Lord of West Cork, his family the heirs. And has his kyung-kyung nature passed through my bloodline? A gentle soul that can incite bone-crushing wildness. Come between me and mine, and we'll see. I think it's quite hypocritical of me to say this because I hated the subject when I was in school, but I think if we paid more attention to our history, maybe we'd stop making the same mistakes over and over and over again. This is Invocation in the style of Robert Desmos. I call on those evicted by John George Adair, the breaking down of the doors. I call on the women and the liberties who feasted off rats from a sleeping mother's milk. I call on soldiers lost in World War I, families who buried them and under the cover of night. I call on the children hired out to work like slaves. I call on the black blight, the search smell of putrid flesh, families forced to separate the cove, the horrors of that slow crossing, those who were sent back on arrival, those who never left. I call on Cromwell's victims. I call on brothers slain by brother, their mothers. I call on those who toiled at white linen sheets after their infants were prized from their arms. A southwest wind howls through tumbled rooms. Medals worn in battle bring heat to the touch. Voices echo from the chaos of the GPO. The boards of coffin ships are creaking. Disturbed spirits rise from communal graves. Brothers rejoin with brothers, watch and wonder, as do the unnamed newborns from limbo. The hidden shame of TB, Strumpet City slums, workhouses, sanitariums, state institutions, the noose, scarred necks. They all whisper. They worry over answers. They pray. Hostile walls who housed the London Irish ask us to remember what they had sorely missed. Remember, remember, Na Jan Jarman. I planned to read this poem originally. It was written when our eldest son first left home, and I thought it was actually quite a mild poem to read. Since I picked this poem, and since we came to Cork, I realise now that he's sitting in New York at this moment as Hurricane Sandy's heading on his way. Himself and his wife went for a midterm break. So suddenly, the poem. My brother-in-law has the same small children, small problems, big children, big problems. And all day, part of me during the day was listening to the news and part of me is trying to ignore it. And I know he's in a house of 14 people in Yonkers at the minute, so that's breathing. The breathing of our house has altered. I sense it when I waken. No, the buildup of breath has lessened. The living space deflates, half full of air, like a balloon after a party. An increase of silence, not the jingle of the key in the front door after a night clubbing, or that slow drop of a footfall up the steps, that one creaky stair, a whispered night, and his father's night song. Far flown from the nestling's breath, when we leaned into his cot just to ensure he was alive, and that essence became child, became teen, became adult, filled our home, moved on. Breath, I, inspiration, spirit, life, family. The eldest son's married and the next son's getting married, and often now that they're couples, there's often that something we don't particularly agree, and I'm a mother-in-law after a while, and I say, you know, you can't say anything, you really can't say anything about it. And then I think back of us as new married, and nobody would have told us anything. Lighting the flame. The paraffin lamp was a wedding present, a working ornament, a base of polished bronze to hold the oil, a small dial to control the level of cotton wick. A pronged metal crick held a glass chimney for flame and light. The pair of us, in our early 20s, setting up home with matches, kerosene, and open flame in our small living space. Neither of us willing to ask the elders for advice on how to make the lamp work. We caused smoke and soot and nearly a fire. Low yellow flame brought a dim glow under the frosted glass shade and no heat. We cast the lantern aside until we learned of the net mantle hanging like a tiny birdcage. We needed to place the mantle equidistant over the base, strike a match, flash oxides off the surface. What remained was a delicate meshing, strong enough to contain fire and white hot heat, create incandescent light from a very small blue flame. Two more, and at this point I just want to say thank you for asking me down, and for everyone here tonight. I find it extraordinary to have people sitting and listening to me reading my poetry, and that every time I do it, I find it amazing. And when you're looking at people's faces and they're either listening to you or their eyes closed, I just find it, so thank you very much. This poem we were describing earlier, this poem, we had to move house recently, a year ago, thanks to the country, the way it is. Anyway, I'll go there. And I was surprised at the time what it was I wanted to bring with me and what I really didn't care if I left behind and what I haven't missed since. I was very surprised. Moving house. I have packed the things in sealed boxes, all the books I read or would like to read or should read, with Charlotte's web and Mum's voice during the nighttime stories. There's the clothes, the warm, the comfortable, the fabulous. Fits well, will fit someday. Never fit, should never have given away. A soft hug, our wedding day, my prom. But throw out the hand-me-downs. Over here are all the kitchen wares and baking tins. The melt of chocolate into crispies, licking the plastic spatula, fresh bread out of the oven, but not those fallen sponge cakes. Take the saucepans with the banging sounds from wooden spoons as my toddler boys played their makeshift drums. All the splashed water as they helped with the washing up. Leave all the burned stuff behind. The TVs and the radios, carry them carefully. They contain the Luxembourg DJ saying Elvis has just died. David Essex, seeing a lamplight shining through my window. Robert Kennedy, lying on the hotel floor. And the day the romper room woman said my name. They will still hold bananas and pajamas, Rugrats and Fraggle Rock, and my boys pleading to keep them on. Lose all the soaps. If we leave behind several years, could we gain a few extra? Take a comfy chair, warm blankets, a good shower, a soft bed. The sight of Damien on the surfboard at Rosnalla. Aidan scoring a winning try. Ian playing Sweet Home Alabama at the school concert. Our first dance. Sunshine on my skin. Every Springsteen concert. Climbing a tree. I'll leave behind the day Ian broke his leg. Sleepless nights and quite a few fights. I'd like to bring the 46A to Dunleary, but not that December trip to Dublin. De Valera and Collins, so both grannies will be happy. JFK, but not Johnson. Martin Luther's dream and Mandela's release. Bob Geldof cursing on Live Aid. Bring the chocolate bars, the maple syrup, the red wine. You can leave the champagne. Take the dolphins at the Hinch and any part of Paris. Leave the tent. Pack it all away. And when the house is empty, I'll go happily as long as you're beside me. And this is just the roundup of it all. Skimming. I found a stone, smooth and flat, in the cradle of my hand. The stone became three skips across the ripple of my river. The river became a vessel for the memory of my mother. My mother became a thought, flying softly as a swallow. The swallow became a raven with an unrelenting shadow. The shadow slowly shed its feathers from the sky. The sky turned to lightness in a soft white lullaby. The sound became a touch that gently rocked a cradle, while loss lay flat and smooth in the palm of my hand.